May it please the court, I'm Jennifer Gormley. My registration number is 26808. I represent my firm and Mildred Janowitz. I'm here today, Your Honor, Your Honors, because the trial court in its June 28, 2012 order violated Mildred Janowitz's constitutional rights of due process, U.S. Constitution and Colorado Constitution, the right not to be deprived of life, liberty, and property without due process of law. When he removed and withdrew her counsel, he did this without a motion. He did this without any request. He removed counsel without a hearing, without findings of fact or evidence, and he did it without any due process of law.
Ms. Gormley, let me ask you as an initial matter. Does your law firm have standing to argue about Ms. Janowitz's rights here on appeal?
I believe so, Your Honor. In terms of our firm standing, in terms of we are retained, but I believe we have a right to argue standing because we were not properly disqualified, Your Honor. There is no way that Ms. Janowitz has any right to appeal on her voice. And Your Honor, I am standing here before you with standing to say on behalf of Mrs. Janowitz that she didn't have due process of law. She didn't have the right to have counsel appeal her. I had to do that for her, and that is why we're here. Our fee agreement, Your Honor, was retroactively revoked months before any protective proceedings were brought, and there was no evidence. And so how we were retroactively fired is also a violation of her rights.
Ms. Gormley, who authorized you to file this appeal?
Well, Your Honor, my authorization stems from the initial time when I was retained. I was retained by Mrs. Janowitz and at a time in December, and then we signed a fee agreement because she was so upset with what was going on with her nephew, who is the appellee, Mr. Rexon. She was so upset that she wanted me to take all steps necessary to change that situation.
Including filing any appeals that might arise from any litigation which had not yet been brought?
Certainly we did not know that this case would go to the extent of appeals, but certainly my client wanted me to move forward and counseled me, conferred with me, and instructed me to move on the case, as I did in her on her behalf throughout the case.
Excuse me, that you say she instructed you, that's in the letter? You're relying on the letter for that?
Your Honor, I'm relying on the continuing representation and the continued cases contact that we had. So the initial representation, yes, I have a fee agreement. But then our relationship continues. I continue to meet with her in person. I continue to take phone calls. We continue to exchange letters.
And is that established in the record?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, we don't have a record to rely on because this judge made a ruling without a record. Mrs. Janowitz didn't have a day in court. There was no motions. And in this case, there is a record.
You're telling us that. Those are your allegations, correct?
Well, there was, yes, Your Honor, on June, he just did an order on June 28th, 2012. He signed an order. He didn't call us to court. He didn't receive a motion.
But you didn't, but anyway, I understand. There's nothing, you're saying that there may have been a record if it hadn't been for the recording problem. But apart from that, you have no other evidence other than the retention letter that would suggest that you are authorized to file this appeal.
I have ample evidence, Your Honor. First of all, the June 28th order, there was no hearing. There was no opportunity to be heard in that because he didn't offer us a hearing.
Did you submit anything into the record, though, that would otherwise establish your authorization to proceed with this appeal on her behalf?
I was not allowed, Your Honor, to see my client. I attempted to contact my client. The police were called. I called my client and the phone was taken out of her hand and it was hung up, not by her, because I could hear her. I had and that's reflected in the record from the previous motion, Your Honor.
What's reflected in the record that appears in the record that you had no contact with her because you were unable to have contact with her. I understand that's in the record. I'm just asking, is there anything else that is in the record that we can review, because we can only review what's in the record, that would show any authorization for you to proceed on this appeal?
I was unable to communicate with my client, and after the order was granted, I have no paper from my client, Your Honor. My client wasn't allowed to come into court to make a position, and I was not allowed to see my client because the conservator guardian wouldn't allow me to have contact while I was still representing her and after, Your Honor. So I don't have any hard evidence for you to see that Mrs. Janowitz's rights in terms of her right to be represented. I don't have her saying, yes, go and do it, because I don't have a recording of a phone call, and I don't have anything in writing.
Go ahead.
Ms. Gormley, one of the things that troubles me about this case is that the both lawyers are making diametrically opposed allegations that are not supported by anything, because there was no transcription of the April hearing. And Mr. Cohen asserted in his brief that Ms. Janowitz said she didn't want you to be her attorney anymore. But we have nothing in the record, as far as I can tell from the briefs, that substantiates that. And there was some reference to your making an effort to settle the record under Colorado Appellate Rule 10. What is the status of your efforts in that regard?
We asked for an opportunity to reconstruct the record. It was in my error that I didn't reconstruct the record under 10. What I can tell you, Your Honor, though, is that we didn't know. And we asked to do it, and we, in the previous order from this court, we are not allowed to go back and reconstruct it. Had we been allowed to, Your Honor, you would have seen that the diametrically opposed, you know, I'm under attack in the pleadings. There wasn't a hearing in terms of Mrs. Janowitz being able to testify. That never happened.
Well,
we don't have a record.
I understand that. And regardless of whose fault it is that we don't have the record, we have a lot of case law that says when there is no record of a hearing, we have to presume that the trial court acted properly. So what do we do, given that precedent, what do we do with the situation here where there is no transcript and sounds like there won't be one?
Yeah, I believe there probably won't be one. But, Your Honor, look at June 28th, 2012, arbitrarily, no reason, no motion. All of a sudden, I'm summarily fired by the court. I'm a privately retained attorney. I've been working with Mildred Janowitz before any protective proceeding, and I've been working through this, and some of that is in the record, as you can see from the exhibits, et cetera.
Well, let me ask you this. If in fact, Ms. Janowitz had said in court in April of last year that she no longer wanted you to be her attorney, in your view, would that be binding on you so that you would no longer be her attorney?
First of all, Your Honor, that didn't get stated. Second of all, my client would have the right to discharge me, absolutely. I believe that. But we're talking about an interesting situation. On the day that they're alleging that that happened, they're also alleging she's an incapacitated person, right? So there's a dichotomy. Can an incapacitated person have counsel or not? My client didn't fire me or discharge me as alleged. It didn't happen. If it had happened, I would take the instruction from my client. But how can my client get represented if she doesn't have the right to, A, be heard? She doesn't have notice of this. She doesn't even know that the court's going to fire her attorney. She doesn't know. Subsequently, I don't have any right to even see the court's record. I don't have any right to see her. I am turned away at the door. My client is homebound. So it's easy for them to say, well, this is what happened. It's very unfortunate that the court didn't keep a record. It would have been nice if the court would have kept a record, but even had the court kept a record, he refused to let us put on our evidence about whether or not she was incapacitated at the earlier hearing. So when he randomly issues an order and says, sorry, you're fired, at that time, I'm working to take care of motions and my client's rights. And for example, a ward is allowed to review reports and object if the reports are inadequate. She would do that with counsel. The ward is allowed to file for modification. The ward is allowed to file for termination. In fact, under the Compensation Act, the ward is allowed to even hire counsel. But there's no way for Mildred Janowitz, who's homebound, she is crippled with arthritis. She's not given a voice because the trial court just randomly decided one day, well, I thought, I anticipated that counsel would withdraw because I made a finding of incapacity. What did that finding of incapacity mean? He made no finding. I mean, did he say, oh, and I looked at
counsel, the- we don't know that, though, because the record's not here. And again, the law is, you know, whether you or I like the law, it is the law, and we have to deal with it.
True.
When there's not a record, we have to presume that the judgment is valid.
The judgment, you have to consider that a ward is allowed to be represented by counsel. The Milstein case is clear, Your Honor. It says that the ward is allowed to have their attorney of their choosing. And in the Myers case, Your Honor, disqualification is a severe remedy. Severe. I've been disqualified from representing my client, and my client doesn't have a voice to even come to you, to speak to you, to say what's wrong. Disqualification of an attorney has to, cannot be based on speculation, cannot be based on conjecture, only upon a showing a clear danger of prejudice to the client. This adversarial system is dependent on us being represented by counsel. If my client, an incapacitated person under the guardianship statute, happened to have a mental health problem and she ended up in the mental health statutes, she would get counsel appointed for her. Incapacity doesn't mean you don't have the right to counsel, and it's all the more reason to have counsel. The trial court judge fired me without giving my client even the right to be heard, and she doesn't have the right to be heard because she can't be heard. And with all due respect, I'd like to preserve my 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
Very well. Thanks, Ms. Gormley.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Ben Cohen, attorney number 26511, representing the appellee Joshua Rexon, who is the court-appointed conservator and guardian for Mildred Janowitz. With me at counsel table is Vaughn Limbaugh. He is my co-counsel and was trial counsel below. He attended the April 9, 2012 guardianship hearing. I did not attend that hearing, Your Honors. There's two things that I'm asking the court to do in this appeal. One is to affirm the trial court's decision discharging Ms. Gormley from this case, and the other is to award Mr. Rexon his attorney's fees incurred on this appeal. Now, the first request for affirmance, that one is easy, and that one is mundane. The trial judge, Judge White, found that Ms. Janowitz lacked the capacity to hire Ms. Gormley, and so as a result, Ms. Gormley never was her lawyer to begin with. The court reviews that question under an abuse of discretion standard. So the question before the court is there record evidence supporting that trial court's determination? The record shows Ms. Janowitz was in her mid-90s, and I'll jump straight to the key piece of evidence. There's the doctor's letter to whom it may concern, dated November 2011, before Ms. Janowitz's relationship with Ms. Gormley ever commenced, that says that her own doctor saying Ms. Janowitz suffers from dementia and lacks capacity. That alone, if that's all you had, that would be enough. That would be plenty of evidence to affirm under an abuse of discretion standard, because the court appreciates there's so much more than that. There are two detailed reports from a court-appointed visitor as a professional social worker confirming that Ms. Janowitz suffered from dementia, was incapacitated, did not have the capacity to hire a lawyer, and likewise, the guardian ad litem issued a very detailed report. He's an attorney. He appreciates the details, and he even went further in addition to confirming Ms. Janowitz's lack of capacity recommending to the court that Mr. Rexon be hired as the guardian or conservator.
Mr. Cohen, I do have one question, because I believe you're arguing the evidence is sufficient to show the finding of incapacity. Are we in a position to review that finding when that finding was made in April and that order was never appealed?
Oh, that's true. But the reason why I'm raising it, you're correct, Judge Lichtenstein, that we're not here to review or make a determination on the determination of incapacity. That's not what's before the court. But the trial court's determination to discharge Ms. Gormley is based on its finding of incapacity.
Well, so the fact that the court made its June finding based on the April finding, does that revive anything, or are we still precluded from looking at that?
No, the court has already determined in a procedural order that the only issue currently on appeal is Ms. Gormley's argument that she should still be in the case. So that is the only issue, and we're saying that the court can affirm the trial court's order determination to discharge Ms. Gormley based on its determination that Ms. Janowitz lacked capacity before she ever purportedly retained Ms. Gormley. That is supported by record evidence.
Mr. Cohen, are you aware of any cases holding that somebody can be retroactively discharged as an attorney?
I'm not sure what the court means by retroactively discharged.
What I mean is that she was apparently hired in December or January, and then in April, Judge White said she was discharged effective as of December or January. Is that clear?
Thank you, Judge Taubman. I'm not aware of any cases specifically making that holding, but it's a perfectly sensible and logical holding. If a trial court makes a determination that a person is incapacitated as of a particular date and did not have capacity to retain an attorney, it follows that the attorney was never properly retained.
Well, what concerns me about the logic of that argument is that it seems like it would make it impossible for someone in Ms. Gormley's position to ever challenge whether that decision was correct.
Well, Ms. Gormley would be in a position to challenge it if she had timely appealed from the April determination of incapacity. There's one thing. Secondly, I would point out to the court that trial courts have very broad discretion over matters of incapacitated persons and whether counsel should be appointed or discharged.
Well, with regard to your first point, I would assume that if Ms. Gormley had appealed from the April order, your argument would have been that based upon Judge White's logic that if Ms. Janowitz didn't have capacity to hire Ms. Gormley, then she was never validly Ms. Janowitz's lawyer.
That's right, Your Honor.
So then in that situation, she, based upon what you just said, she still would not have been able to argue whether or not the trial court's decision was correct.
Well, I'm not contesting that Ms. Gormley has sufficient standing to represent herself in this appeal. She has an interest claiming, you know, future fees from having Ms. Janowitz as a client.
That's not what I'm asking you about. I'm asking you about under what circumstances, if any, would she be in a position where she could challenge the court's decision to terminate her representation of Ms. Janowitz? And your argument seems to be that there are no such circumstances.
No, Your Honor. I think that Ms. Gormley could clearly challenge a trial court's determination of incapacity. And in fact, she's doing so indirectly in this appeal, arguing that there was no evidence, and we're showing that there was evidence.
But that goes back to my concern about the retroactive termination of her attorney-client relationship. Once it's terminated retroactively, then the argument that seems to logically follow is that there was never a valid attorney-client relationship, and therefore she would not be in a position ever to challenge any decision to terminate her representation.
I don't think that your conclusion follows from your premise, Judge Taubman. The court made a finding that Ms. Janowitz lacked capacity to hire Ms. Gormley at the time she purportedly did. That finding can be challenged based on challenging the court's determination that she lacked capacity. That's an evidence-based challenge. There was a hearing, and although there is no transcript of the hearing, Ms. Gormley could have presented any evidence that she had that Ms. Janowitz did have capacity at that time. The record reflects, what I'm aware of, is the one piece of evidence that Ms. Gormley had, which was the report of the psychologist that she hired, and of course testing as a hired psychologist would, that Ms. Janowitz had capacity. But against that, there is, you know, the relative mountain of evidence that Ms. Janowitz lacked capacity. The court can review that under an abuse of discretion standard and determine that if the trial court erred, that Ms. Janowitz had capacity and that Ms. Gormley would be her lawyer as a result. But that's under an abuse of discretion standard, that is such an easy call given this record. What we do have in the record, which is ample for this trial court to affirm Judge White's determination, Ms. Janowitz lacked capacity. And let me add, Your Honors, that if there's any problem with that, we do have the alternative basis for upholding Judge White's determination, which is the evidence, the record evidence, that Ms. Janowitz in any event fired Ms. Gormley in open court. Judge Taubman, you asked questions about that.
Counsel, you say that she fired him in open court, and you made citations in your brief to that effect. I found nothing to support that. There were certainly court orders saying that she has expressed her view, or I forget the exact wording, but there's nothing about that having been said in open court that I was able to find. Can you correct me if I'm wrong?
The orders of guardianship and conservatorship do say, and I quote, the ward expressed the express, hence, this is referring to testimony in court, expressed that she does not desire to be represented by attorney Jennifer Gormley. And again, the protected person expressed that she does not desire to be represented by attorney Jennifer Gormley. That's because Ms. Janowitz gave testimony at the guardianship.
No, counsel, we don't know what she did. And I'm not disputing that she expressed it, but you're saying she's testified in open court, and what you just read doesn't say that. She could have expressed it in a variety of ways.
Very well, but what I just quoted from the orders constitutes record evidence that Ms. Janowitz did not want Ms. Gormley to be her lawyer. And right. That is sufficient, given Lafond v. Sweeney.
Well, it certainly represents the court's finding, and we are required to, since we don't have a record, to assume it's based on evidence. But I think you've gone far beyond that in what you're stating.
Very well. I think that is a sufficient explication of a client's desire to discharge an attorney, to frame it that way. I hope I didn't overstate it.
Well, let me follow up on Judge Miller's comment. What you're quoting from is Judge White's order.
Yes.
Normally we review, assuming that's a finding of fact, normally if there were a record, we would review it for clear error. Here, there's no record that we have to review. So there's no way that we can determine whether what Judge White concluded was a fair representation of Ms. Janowitz's testimony or not.
Well, that's right, Judge Taubman. And therefore, what this court must do under the extensive case law that we've recited in the brief is to affirm when there is an absence of record. Well, first of all, there's not an absence of record. It's a 627-page PDF record of all the pleadings, which amply supports the narrative and positions that we've given in our briefs, and I think fairly contradicts the narrative.
Well, but except, I understand that there's a 627-page record, but I'm not sure how that supports a conclusion based upon a hearing where a trial court is supposed to make findings of fact based upon testimony that the trial court judge has heard.
And how are we supposed to evaluate when the client is said to be incapacitated? Does that mean she's nonetheless competent to testify and to state that she no longer wishes to be represented by someone?
Your Honor, our position is that Ms. Janowitz lacked capacity, like the record says, as early as November, before she ever hired Ms. Gormley. She lacked capacity at the hearing. Our point is that if you accept Ms. Gormley's argument that she is competent, then you should also accept the record evidence that Ms. Janowitz exercised her absolute and unfettered right to discharge her. It says so in the record. What Ms. Janowitz Ms. Gormley would have you believe here is that Mr. Limbaugh snuck that language into the order and Judge White just didn't notice it. That's a very, very serious accusation. I mean, lawyers get disbarred for that.
It's also very serious that you said that she deliberately chose not to recreate a record in order to bamboozle the court, or words, you didn't say bamboozle, but in order to make the argument that she's making.
Yes.
And what's your evidence that she deliberately did that?
I'll tell you, Your Honor. The briefs contain ample reference to the appellate rules, Rule 2080. So it's clear that, and this, there's a specific comment in the opening brief that says citations to the precise record location is not possible in this case. However, counsel knows, or you can tell the counsel knows, of the requirement, and they recited the requirement. Counsel filed a Rule 21 petition to the Colorado Supreme Court, and also a petition for writ of mandamus to the United States Supreme Court, which, this is the petition for writ of mandamus, this is the appendix, in other words, the record. Counsel knows that whenever you submit something to an appellate court, you give the appellate court the record, the basis for your arguments. Having done so for the Colorado Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court, it would be anomalous to say that, oh, there's nothing that I can show you here. The inference is quite clear, Judge Miller, that a deliberate decision was made to try to parlay the failure of the recording device into a more generous standard of review. And that is not something that this court does.
Well, I gather you're disagreeing with Ms. Gormley's statement to us in her opening argument that she wasn't familiar with the requirements of Colorado Appellate Rule 10 until at some subsequent point.
Your Honor, I will allow the possibility that Ms. Gormley might not have been familiar with Rule 10, but that is a different from saying that there is no record that I can cite to. It's different to not be familiar with the requirement to recreate the record. And Your Honors, this court has addressed Appellate Rule 10 in other cases, and it's becoming increasingly important because, you know, time was when there was a court reporter on judges' staffs, you pretty much always have a record. Now, when somebody's got to press not just the record button, but also understand how the whole sound system works, this kind of situation happens more and more. This case is a teachable moment regarding Rule 10. This case provides the court an opportunity to remind the bar that when a recording device fails, Rule 10 requires you to recreate the record, and you cannot use the absence of record to your advantage, certainly. And for that reason, Your Honors, I would request that you affirm the trial court remand. I did not get an opportunity to address fees, but we do request, for all the reasons in our brief, that you also remand instructions to award appellate fees in favor of Mr. Rexon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Ms. Gormley, you have just under 3.5 minutes.
Thank you.
There's a reference to a mountain of evidence that was never presented. It's a mountain of hearsay, Your Honors. Ms. Janowitz is in her mid-90s, and perhaps there's a doctor's letter from November of 11 that they want to rely on. The same doctor a week later wrote another letter that said she had capacity. And there, in the record, you see that there were multiple powers of attorney. The powers of attorney that I drafted in January of 2012 were to undo powers of attorney relating back. And then Mr. Rexon did powers of attorney after the protective proceeding started. So she lacks capacity somehow to hire me as counsel, right? There's no findings. Judge White did not make any findings when he wrote that order. If you even assume the bottom sentence of that order related to her statement about representation, the court never made an order saying I was discharged. The court never made any findings that I wasn't her counsel. I was in fact her counsel, and I continue to be her counsel, and things continue to happen. We were filing pleadings, continuing to represent her. When we came to the point of the financial plan that was filed inadequately, we objected to that. When this motion came before the court for clarification from the GAL, he appeared at my office to take documents from me when he was no longer the GAL. And that motion causes the court to say, wow, I anticipated that Attorney Gormley would withdraw because I made a finding of incapacity. Somehow, a finding of incapacity made a couple months earlier relates now to this time in June, and I still don't know how there's a statement of a finding of incapacity. What was the particularities of that finding? I mean, he didn't give us any detailed findings in his order to support that legal conclusion.
That appeal is not before us, though, right? That issue?
Correct, Your Honor. The point is what's before us is it was an extreme measure for this judge to disqualify me as counsel. It was an extreme measure. There is no rhyme or reason to how it happened. There was no motion. Mildred Janowitz didn't have a chance to go into court after that June or in June to say, I don't want Jennifer Gormley as my attorney to file a motion to ask me, to confer with me. She isn't represented and hasn't been represented. There's nobody representing her at all. And it's not right for her, a person who's homebound, to be stuck with the person she doesn't want and didn't want, contrary to what they will argue, of course. My job as her attorney is to follow through with what she instructed me to do. And I was doing that, and I am doing that today. I have to say that it was mere speculation and conjecture with no showing of any danger. What was the danger? Judge White fired me as her counsel with no danger to process. There was certainly other remedies. If there was a question of why am I acting, why didn't he have a hearing? Why is he acting to say, well, you need to be out of here, without saying to anybody, where is the due process? Mildred Janowitz doesn't have any constitutional rights. She had a right to hire me, and she did. Milstein supports that. Myers certainly supports that I should not have been disqualified or discharged. I thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Gormley. Thanks again, Mr. Cohen. We appreciate both of your arguments this afternoon. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.